This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
A gorgeous Wednesday afternoon. Brant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. It is beautiful outside.
It's going to be hot today.
It's going to be close to 80 degrees today, did I see?
That is correct.
What, chance of rain, little thunderstorm situation?
I didn't see the thunderstorms in the forecast, but keep in mind, yesterday, every time I checked the old weather on my iPhone application, it was 100% different. Like, in the morning, it was like, well, thunderstorms are coming in the afternoon, then thunderstorms are here now at like 11. Well, thunderstorms tonight. Like, it changed so rapidly. As of now, no thunderstorms planned. But again, who the hell knows? Who knows?
Couldn't have been a better day for thunderstorms yesterday.
Indeed.
With us having to leave the house from 2 o'clock to about 8 o'clock last night for all of the like the home appointments with the house on the market. So what we did was, we went for just a huge long walk, and then another huge long walk, and then another huge long walk.
Did you walk at all?
And then another huge long walk.
Did you mix in a walk?
And it just rained the entire time, so we would have to go sit in our car and drive around Northern Virginia.
Oh, man.
And then drive to another place in Northern Virginia, and then go to the Maryland border, and then drive to another border. I mean, it was – at least there was a crying baby and a dog in the car. 20 minutes into this six-hour span where we just had to basically kill time yesterday.
Wow.
We're walking around that nice lake I told you about that we found near where I live.
That you just discovered as you're moving.
Just discovered it. Love it. Walking around, counting turtles. Fiona goes right into the lake.
Yep.
Right into the lake.
Yep.
French bulldogs don't swim that well. Luckily, she – so basically what happened was she's walking along the side, and it's all, you know, there's like a five-foot drop-off with, you know, kind of like a wood railing along the side, and the dog's not going over the edge. But there are a couple of areas where – like, there's little banks that you can kind of climb down, so to speak. And there's one area where the water comes all the way up almost to where you're walking. And there's just, like, grass that leads right into the water. Well, she took the, like, weeds that had been cut that day, or maybe, like, a weed whacker had come through, like, landscaping, laying on top of the water as land. And she just kept walking right into it and just fell straight into the water. So, of course, I have to react real quick and get her out. She's all wet and gross in the lake water.
It was the
very beginning of our six-hour saga yesterday. We were off to an immaculate start.
Well, I'll take a page out of my friend Grant Paulson's book when things like that happen. Why didn't you just tell her not to do that? You
should have
just told her not
Fiona
to do that.
And the baby. And chill.
Should have just said, don't do that.
A whole lot better.
Right? Wouldn't she have just not done that if you just said, hey, don't do that? Doesn't it happen that way? Don't you have to just tell the dog, don't do something, and then it doesn't do it? Oh, man. Did we just lose Jeeps? Bummer. He's outside. He's basically on his cell phone. There are gremlins involved. This is such a weird, bizarre time. So here's what we wanted to get to in this part of the hour. Major League Baseball is proposing a whole bunch of rule changes. Now, I don't want to say rule changes, guys. And it's more like the idea of some different things that they're going to try to see if they can get as many games as possible. And GP, just talking about Major League Baseball's potential rule changes. And again, keep on the rule changes. Just a quick adjustments to try some quirky things this year to get in as many games as possible. Who knows when they're actually going to be able to start this and get it moving. So forget about the when debate. It's kind of about these makeshift things to get games in a bizarre tournament-style environment. Everybody that's played youth sports, you know, up through, you know, middle school, high school, et cetera, has done these sort of on-site tournaments. I mean, I remember I played in the Beast of the East tournament. I went to Wheeling, West Virginia, and all these, you know, the CABA national tournament, all these other kinds of things. You got together on one site, and you had a bunch of different fields, and you'd whittle down competition. So everybody at, in the amateur levels coming up has done these sorts of things, like Major League Baseball is talking about, going to Arizona, using the spring training sites and Diamondback's home field. But some of the rule changes are pretty quirky.
Yeah, they are. I mean, and it's stuff that people are either going to love or hate. And it's something I do want to get into, and we could take some calls on what you'd be interested to see or not. It's things like the electronic strike zone being implemented that you and I have longed for some time. They want to try to maintain sufficient distance from the catcher to the batter. So one way to do that is to implement this electronic strike zone. They wouldn't allow mound visits from the catcher to the pitcher or from any of the pitching coaches out to the mound. Doubleheaders would be seven-inning games, a la the youth level, not nine-inning games. Earlier than expected start date, you'd try to get as many games in as possible, and they'd be closer to 162 maybe than any of us thought would have been a possibility if they actually get started in May or June, which is still, to me, super optimistic, and I don't know how realistic it is. Regular use of on-field microphones like we saw as TV viewers in spring training, and then sitting not in the dugout, but teams would be sitting, coaches managing from the stands, basically, where players would be walking up to home plate from their seats in the third and the fourth row in the crowd, all at least 6 feet apart. Those are some of the quirky things, and we can get into what you like, what you don't like. But what I wanted to hit on with you is some of the players that are being robbed by what's going on. We talked about Ovi trying to chase down Gretzky.
Mm.
He should be scoring goals right now that count toward his tab as it pertains to becoming the number one goal scorer in the history of the National Hockey League. Mike Trout's in a similar boat, though. I saw this via Axios. Get this. So if you project Mike Trout's career home run total with and without a 2020 season, it is the difference of him becoming the all-time home run king, surpassing Barry Bonds,
wow,
and not catching him. Here are the numbers. With a 2020 season projection of him hitting 46 home runs. And by the way, most people in 162, there's a lot of reasons that this was expected to have been his career year based on, you know, the numbers that you pencil in by age and performance over the trajectory studied of sluggers' careers. So 46 is a pretty, I would say, low total, but we'll take it. If he hit 46 home runs this year, he would get to 783 in his career. Bonds hit 762. Without those home runs, you don't make them up later on, obviously.
Right.
737 is what he'd be on pace for without this season. Well below Bonds' 762.
He'd be
below
third all
Aaron's
time.
755. Still above Ruth, A-Rod, Willie Mays. So it's not like it's disappointing in terms of the career he would have had. But think about that. We've talked about Ovi and the goals and Wayne Gretzky. Goals in hockey, not as big a deal, it doesn't seem like, as the home run record, where 755 forever was a number if you liked baseball that you knew. 714 with Ruth ingrained in your brain. Bond, 762, if you consider him the home run king now, even though he cheated. 762 is a number people know. Trout has a chance to catch him and is on pace to do so. But if a season is taken from him, would no longer be Danny.
Yeah, and it's in his prime, too. It's not, you know, like he's taken his age 20-year-old season away, or 21 in Juan Soto's case, or something like that. This is a prime year for Mike Trout. It's something I hadn't thought of, but you're right. I mean,
did you see what Verducci wrote about that?
I was just going to comp it to Ovechkin. You're missing 21 games, and that's, you know, at his goal pace, that's 10 or 11 goals, and that's, you know, that may very well be the difference when you get into those astronomical totals, but that's not what Trout would be experiencing, losing half a century, basically, of those. That's a bigger deal.
It is, but the SI piece from Verducci speaks to the fact, and it just kind of to give detail to what you were saying, Trout is at what he called the golden nexus of an athlete's life. When accumulated wisdom, 1,199 career games, 22,652 pitches seen, intersects with physical peak. And you only have that for essentially 1 or 2 years, right? Mm. You're the smartest you're going to be in terms of experience, what you've seen and what you now can forecast coming in terms of pitches. But your physical skills have not declined yet. Because theoretically, you're only going to get smarter and smarter and smarter. So that x-axis of knowing what a pitcher's thinking never goes away. But the y-axis comes down, which is your ability. Right now, that dot on the x-axis is as far to the right, and on the y-axis is as far north as it can possibly be. And you basically, based on all the studies, get 1 or 2 calendar years, and Trout is smack dab in the middle of it. Probably his best chance to make a run at 60 home runs is what's talked about in this piece. By the numbers, Trout's power numbers, home runs and slugging percentage, have steadily gone up throughout his career. His strikeouts, his stolen bases have gone down. He is aging beautifully, and it is going to give him a great chance, having had his entire career tested for steroids, to catch Barry Bonds.
Yep.
And I've always said baseball kind of needs him to do so. It would be an awesome thing for the game not to have this weird cloud hanging over it where we don't know who the home run king is, because some people say it's Bonds and others say it's Aaron. No, it would be Mike Trout, who was clean the entire way and tested every step of the way.
And that would be it. And now you finally have some protection in the order. I mean, that's what they envision Albert Pujols being. And with all due respect to a future Hall of Famer, he ain't been Albert Pujols in almost a decade at this point. You add Anthony Rendon to that lineup, please give Mike Trout pitches to hit. Please and thank you. You know what I mean? Like, that to me is his best opportunity to put up, I was going to say, staggering numbers. He's already done that. I mean, he's already on pace to be maybe the greatest player ever in terms of offensive weaponry and his wins above replacement and everything else. I mean, you look at some of the stolen base totals to go with his staggering home run totals. He's a 285, 200 guy right now in terms of home runs and steals. He could do just absolutely ridiculous things where you can't pitch around him, and you see some of the walk totals that kind of reflect that. Well over 100 walks, I believe, in 4 seasons. The other ones, he's in the 90s. So This was a golden opportunity in his prime with another star in that lineup in Rendon to give him a great chance. It's something I hadn't thought of, but you're right. It is a corollary of what might be a funky season or not a season.
This gave me a new appreciation, too, for some of the guys who lost some of the best years of their career.
World War II.
Years and years ago to wars and things.
Yeah.
You know, like Ted Williams, who had essentially 5 seasons in the smack dab middle elite part of his career. World War II, and Korea. How many numbers, how many stats, how many awards did he leave on the floor getting cut out of that career? Something that was brought up in this Axios piece. You know, and I always see the numbers, and I say, well, you accomplished what you did. And I can't worry about what you didn't. And I, you know, a lot of guys like Ken Griffey Jr. and others had these injuries that cut them short. You are whatever your numbers say. But, man, I mean, it kind of provides a new perspective for me of a new appreciation. It's something, because it wasn't your own doing. If anything, you're heroic. You know, you did something above and beyond and should be applauded and commended for that. Trout's just kind of a victim like everyone else sitting here waiting to play baseball.
That's a good point.
So many of those players like Bob Feller who left during the war, I don't know, it's just something I was thinking about.
No, it is. It's food for thought. And we think of it here kind of locally with Ovechkin. We keep, every time he scores, we kind of look up at that tally board, right? It's like we're doing a goal-a-thon, and you go, okay, so now he could do, if he does 40 goals per season, does that, but then he could do 50 once, and then that changes the number of years. Maybe he could do it by 2025, whatever. And now this is another obstacle for him where he's had things taken away, not even through his play, right? You have the lockout and you know, the injuries happen. I consider that kind of a normal part of the course of sports, and staying healthy is almost as much of a skill sometimes as it is good fortune. But this will be the second time that Ovechkin's had a big chunk of his career taken away through no fault of his own. It had nothing to do with his play or anything else, just labor issues one time and then coronavirus the second time.
Ron Rivera on why the Redskins were willing to trade Quentin Dunbar for the ham sandwich that's half eaten in your refrigerator, and what he thinks is going to come down the pike with Trent Williams. He talked to reporters yesterday, and he gave some candid, thoughtful answers. You'll hear from Rivera's press conference next on Grant and Danny.
It was a whole different set of circumstances in this world right now, and we have a whole new normal. Just having gone through it at one point in time, and just kind of saying, okay, at least the one thing we're going to be able to do once we get the clearance from the league and from the NFLPA is we'll be able to start working with our players virtually, and then we'll go from there. I'm not too concerned because I've kind of gone through this, and just knowing that the best thing that we can do is if we're going to, you know, be able to work with our guys virtually is make sure that we make contact with them as soon as we are, you know, just follow the rules as to what our time frame is going to be with each player and the positions and the groups. But the biggest thing is just be ready when time comes to get back on the field with them, whether it's sometime in late May or June or heck, not until training camp. I mean, and whenever that is. So again, I'm not overly concerned about it because I've gone through it. I just think the most important thing is just to be prepared and be ready and, you know, jump on it when you get the opportunity. As far as the draft's concerned, you know, it's interesting. I was watching CBS morning show and it just kind of neat to watch how they're doing it and thinking to myself this morning, you know what, that's kind of the way we're going to have to approach it is the way they're doing it. I mean, you know, they're going in and out and they're talking to their different reporters that are doing their different things and they're going back to the main folks and, you know, they're doing their talking. So I kind of imagine that's what we're trying to hope to have as far as that's concerned. And if that's what we can do, you know, and just kind of show everybody, you know, that you can function within the guidelines that are being set by the
CBA. Rivera, very thorough, as he tends to be yesterday talking with Redskins reporters. He doesn't mind addressing reporters and having a rapport with them at the podium, and he's going to be pleasant. He's not going to be a jerk like, you know, so many coaches around the NFL, and I think that's one of the reasons why he's so well-liked. But he covered a lot of ground yesterday in his discussion with reporters. We're going to get into and react to some of the big stories with the Redskins. But how about just this new way of the world there, that audio via a Zoom call where all of the Redskins daily beat reporters in their little windows on a computer were on Zoom with Ron Rivera, who the Redskins had with a graphic that said HTTR behind him.
Here we are.
2020 is a strange beast, my friend.
Yeah. Again, just think back to February or January. Who knew? You know what I mean? Maybe a couple of doomsday preppers that say everything is going to go wrong every time the news comes out, no matter what, can claim that they knew. But go back a year ago. I mean, what if I told you this is what is going to be the new norm? I'll just be in my laundry room, you know, staring at a wall with some laundry hanging next to me and some Legos that my son has assembled. You're going to be, you know, on your back porch having just sold your house. Like, time is undefeated, dude. Just weird stuff happens. This is just, of course, this is the way a press conference, a conference call would go. We're just doing something that no one's ever heard of called Zoom, where people have bombed Zoom feeds and hacked in and done ridiculous stuff. And now there's like a 2.0 version of software. That's all changed in the last week, too.
I want to go to cut eight and start off with the quarterbacks. Bringing in Kyle Allen was the topic. You know, Rivera yesterday would get into Haskins versus Allen, and he spoke frequently about a competition between the two.
I think it would be a good competition. I really do. Mostly because having been around Kyle for two seasons and kind of watched him interact with the quarterbacks that were in the room, you know, he was in the room with a very strong personality in Cam Newton, and Kyle handled himself tremendously. And I really do think, you know, and then we had Taylor Heinicke, who was Taylor's understudy, and he was great with Taylor. So I just know what kind of person he is and just feel that he's the kind of guy that's going to go on this. He's not threatened by anything. What he's really concerned about is doing the best job he can. And if he ends up starting and being the guy, great. He'll be fired up about it. And if he's not, if he's in a backup role, he'll be fired up about that as well. I mean, he's the right kind of person for that room. And that's what I felt really strongly about. And that's why, you know, we were able to make the deal with Carolina and bring him in. I just think that he's got that real good sense about him that, you know, being part of something is better than being an individual.
I think if you're Team Haskins or one of the folks listening who is dead set on Haskins being the guy, you like hearing him get into the idea that if he's a backup, he'll be fine with that. But it starts that cut, that conversation with there's going to be a competition. Now, maybe that's coach speak. He has said this every step of the way, though. He talked about whether it was McCoy or whether it was Keenum, whether it was Alex Smith if he got healthy enough and had some miracle recovery. Dwayne Haskins was going to have to win his job. I take that as not much more than a coach saying that the running back's going to have to compete. Mm-hmm. But they did bring in a guy who knows his offense. He just said, well, coming back from the break, how strange this is going to be. They may not get together until training camp. So Haskins really on his own, with his playbook sent to him, is going to have to try to master this thing and get to a point where he can fend off Allen, who's going to know what he's doing in day one of camp.
Yeah.
You just hope if you're Haskins that you get some time on the grass with these coaches before July.
So, GP, our buddy, JP Finley of NBC Sports Washington, you know, had a bunch of small pieces that he typed up based on this press conference. And one of his takeaways, and I'm trying to find his tweet now. This is from last night. My takeaways from Ron Rivera's press conference. Dwayne is the starting quarterback. And I heard the same thing you did, right? I listened to that press conference and I listened to the audio. I had a very different takeaway. And maybe it's because I came in with a little bit of a bias here, but I want to figure out how I am so different from JP on what Ron Rivera was saying. All I heard was the coach speak thing that you just mentioned and a pretty thorough endorsement of Kyle Allen, whatever his role is. I didn't hear anywhere in there or any of the other cuts where, oh, yeah, we all know what's going to happen. It's Dwayne Haskins, and that's that, right? What am I missing? Am I wrong, or do you think JP might be off base?
I didn't hear that either at all. You know, no. I just think that's the assumption based on the situation, but I don't think you got that out of Ron Rivera yesterday.
Well, so I'm wondering what I'm missing here, because, again, this was JP had a couple takeaways.
Why do you have to be missing something, though? That's where I'm confused.
Well, because JP had a completely different take from this. He goes, my takeaways from Ron Rivera press conference, Dwayne is the starting quarterback, Chase Young is the pick, and they're rebuilding and not going to chase cheap wins in 2020. The Chase Young is the pick thing I do buy, by the way. I think that's happening, because you look at Ron Rivera's track record of never trading down when he was in Carolina, and he kind of gave his player A and then player D and then all those kind of things. It basically sounded like, we're in love with somebody, we'll stay there and take him, please, and thank you, right?
I just think maybe you could have – those would have been the takeaways even before the press conference. Yeah. I don't know if there was anything specifically said. I mean, Dar, if you can get J.P. Onder in the Blitz today at noon, that'd be great. Because we could ask him point blank, what did you hear right. That – gave you the definitive thought that Haskins is the guy. But, I mean, he referenced backup there for Kyle Allen. Again, this is not yesterday's press conference related. I've talked to several people in the building since Kyle Allen was acquired, and they've all told me he was brought in to be the backup.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean see D'Angelo Hall, see Clinton Portis, see Rivera yesterday, these comments where they say, oh, there's got to be a competition, he's got to win, and that the competition won't be closer than it might have in a normal offseason because Allen knows the offense and Haskins isn't going to get a chance to learn it like he traditionally would have in that very important first to second offseason for a quarterback. But he was the 15th pick last year. He played half of a season. His last six quarters were really good. Kind of a sentence ends there, period. He's the starter next year. You traded a fifth for a guy who didn't get drafted a couple seasons ago.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of where I'm at as far as naming him the starter. But I get your question. Your question is, was something said yesterday that made it seem like it's over, Haskins is the guy?
Right.
I didn't hear the entire press conference. I've heard the cuts like everybody else. I didn't hear anything that specifically made me think that. But we can have JP, who was in on the entire call, on the show hopefully a little bit later on one way or the other, and chat with him about that. I want to get into what he said about Trent Williams and where they're at with Trent right now, but also why he seemed to think they got good value back for Quentin Dunbar.
Yeah.
And maybe the most candid response he had that was most telling. A lot of this stuff is read between the lines. When he talked about trying to get Amari Cooper and not being as interested in Austin Hooper as people may have thought, I thought he did give some really good insight into their offseason plan. So we can do that as we continue. Grant and Danny with you. The double play, what's going on in our lives. Nothing to do with sports in 18 minutes. And the Beltway Blitz at noon. Welcome back, in case you're curious. I'm wearing a black T-shirt. It says Grant on it with a picture of Ulysses S. Grant. Khaki shorts and black Under Armour flip-flops. That is the ensemble today at home. I didn't even have to put clothes on, because I'm at my house, but I did for you people. I did it for you guys.
Sure. Well, you did it for me because we're looking at each other on Zoom. I've just got mesh shorts and a T-shirt on, my friend. It's I'd say it's gray. It's like a cobalt or a silvery kind
cotton
of gray.
Cotton or dry fit?
Yeah. So I went with that.
No, that's a question. Cotton or dry fit?
Oh, it's a dry fit situation. It's an Under
Armour. Do you even own cotton shirts anymore? I only ever see you wearing dry fit.
I know. It's because Yeah, there's a lot of reasons. But my lady wife has, as we've kind of moved and done different things over the years, like, I keep shirts and I love them. They remind me of times past. And I don't want to say I'm a hoarder, but I'm someone that likes to keep things. She's like you. She's a minimalist. She wants things gone. And so I've sort of begrudgingly, kicking and screaming, been dragged into the new reality where I just don't have shirts that I don't wear for 2, 3, 4 years at a time. So I've pared down the majority of my regular T-shirts that aren't the Under Armours. But yeah, I got some.
I realize that I have way too many cotton shirts left in my dresser because I don't like wearing them. So why own them? And as a minimalist, as you just mentioned, I will be getting rid of almost all of them when we make the move in the coming few weeks. I mean, if you think I normally don't keep things, oh, buddy.
Oh,
Daniel,
man.
Wait till you see what kind of clinic I put on here in the very near future. Just getting rid of stuff left and right. Allison's going to be so angry. There's going to be like three boxes making the move with us. It's going to be
great.
Because
is she like me? She likes to keep things and she has sentiment?
I would say, probably about as much as you are. She is not a hoarder by any means. And I would say 75% of the time I say, can I get rid of this? She says yes. But she is way more normal than I am. I mean, I keep nothing. If I know I'll need something the next day at 5 o'clock, I'll throw it away and say I'll figure it out tomorrow at 4.
Okay.
Like, that's where I'm at.
It's 4:45, and I had that thing yesterday, but whatever. We'll see.
Great example of that is I'll get texts or emails regularly that I need a day or two later, and I screen grab them and keep them in my gallery just so that I can delete them. But then the problem is I clean out my gallery every few hours or every night.
Your Robert gallery gets cleaned?
Yeah, and when I clean out the Robert gallery, I occasionally delete them thinking, oh, I got that email, but then I remember I already deleted the email as well, so now I've got nothing. I've got nothing.
So if everyone in the world that has the Gmail service, and it's wonderful, it's really, really good with all the storage and everything.
How many Gmail emails do you have in your inbox right now this second?
Oh,
I mean total.
Yeah, how would you tell that? Here's the number. 43,323.
Okay, I have two.
Yeah, so what Grant does is...
And they both came, by the way, since 11:30. One is from Matchbox Restaurants, because traditions matter. Easter Supper for 4+, our new half-price wine store. They're trying to get me to buy that. The other is from Glory Days Grill, back our mac and cheese at home order for Easter.
And what Grant does is a conversation can be running and ongoing. Let's say he and I have a thread about a show or a conversation with our boss that will need information that's valuable. That doesn't matter. The instant he's responded, he basically deletes that entire chain and it's gone forever. So I keep conversations, and there's no reason for me to delete them because I've got infinite storage space. Not my friend Grant Paulson. He is such a minimalist, he destroys any record therein. So if one of us has to be, or we're put on trial at some point, it'll be much harder to get the forensics of you than it would be for me for email conversations.
That's probably the case.
Like, if I'm on the witness stand, much harder for them to get something out of you than it is to me. Well, you kept this email in your inbox. This is from, September of 2014.
There are a lot of annoying things about me and frustrating things, but in terms of working with me for you and Darnth, I'm like hey, can you send me that thing again? Or, hey, I don't have that thing from the other day. Has to be very high on the list.
It doesn't bother me. I think it probably bothers Darnth Tommy, though.
I can confirm it does not bother me, but it does bother the only other person on the show.
Yeah. There's a lengthy list of things about me that bothers Darnth. Some of which I can control and others aren't, but that is certainly right. One of those things. And I have we have the spots and stuff that I pin on the wall in front of me, and I'll keep only the spots that we need. Mm-hmm. So I'll have three or four at any given moment. Whereas Danny will have hundreds of sheets of paper, some of which were given to us as one-off things for a food drop in August of 2013 that are still crumbled up with coffee stains directly in front of him. They're the second sheet somehow. I don't know, the top sheet is his Ted Britt read for that day, and then the second sheet is when Fuddruckers came in our second day as a show with, coffee stains on it. I just don't
understand. I'd love Fuddruckers to come in right now,
that
by
would
the
be
way.
Incredible.
Give me the toppings bar. I'll put guacamole right on that burger.
I don't know how that was the pool, but I'm in the mood for Fuddruckers, I guess.
I am, too. By the way, I went my first Fuddruckers experience. This is true. It wasn't until way later in life than everyone else. We just never had them around us. When I was growing up, we didn't have Fuddruckers or Red Robin, and both are wonderful experiences. They just keep bringing you fries at Red Robin if you ask them to, even though our boss would only get half a portion of fries and refuse any extra fries, by the way, which is criminal and insulting to those of us that desire fries at all times. But anyway, so my first experience at Fuddruckers, I roll in there, and the most enthusiastic guy in the history of Fuddruckers is behind the counter, and for some reason could tell that I was nervous. Or didn't know what the procedure was, et cetera. And he's like, hey, man, first time at Fuddruckers? And I was like, yeah, actually. And he goes, all right, welcome to Fudd's in the City, my man. And I was like, this is weird. Are they
this
all
is
like
something.
This? So far, this is my first experience, and I'm assuming everybody's like that.
I've got a good Fuddruckers story for you as well. I hate to tell it right after yours.
Dude, it's the Fuddruckers segment on
play one-upper here. Yeah. All right, so first of all, I love Fuddruckers, everything about it. I miss Fuddruckers, and I say that because a lot of them are gone. In fact, we drove to Woodbridge for something, I don't remember even what we were doing down there, several weeks ago, and we had to pull over to, like, change the baby, and we were off the road, and, like, we drove through the woods and under a mountain and through a hill, and we like, parked at a Fuddruckers, and I'm like, oh, my God, it's a Fuddruckers. Nowhere near the road, back off the highway. Like, I'm like, why is this here? What is happening?
Providence has smiled upon you.
There's that one and the one in Ashburn. Those are the couple that I know of at this point. Others that I used to frequent, like in Alexandria, are gone. But anyway, my favorite Fuddruckers story ever. I've told it on the show once. So if you listen to the show all the time, you've heard this, and you're going to like it again, I think. The rest of you are in for a treat. So I go to Fuddruckers in Ashburn once a week at this point in my life with Chris Russell and some of the other Redskins beat folks out in Ashburn. I was covering the team for 106.7. And I think, like, Rich Campbell from the Times, Mike Jones from the Post, a couple other guys would occasionally come with us. And we would just kind of have some fellowship at Fudd's is what we'd call it. So we'd go over there at, like, noon on a Wednesday. Well, one time in the evening after we're done, we go over to Fuddruckers after practice. It's going to be a late night. We got a bunch of stuff. There was a lot of news. We're going to be there all night. So we go grab some Fuddruckers. I walk in, and London Fletcher is directly in front of me in line at Fuddruckers. He's got, like, three or four kids with him. And I don't know who are his kids and who are their friends or what.
Sure.
But it's just a line of, like, seven people, a couple of dudes I don't know, London Fletcher and a bunch of kids, and then me and Chris Russell. And London Fletcher turns around and sees us. And he looks like he just saw a ghost. Like, Fletcher's looking at us like he dated a girl for 10 years, hasn't seen her since, has thought about her every day, praying he never bumped into her, and is fearing that when he sees her, she's going to make a scene in the restaurant.
Wow.
I mean, he was very bothered that we were there when he was there. And so I just kind of give him a nod, and I'm like, hey, what's up, London? That was kind of the – I thought that was it. I thought we were done talking.
Yeah.
He was going to be with his family. I was going to be with my buddy, and we were going to be at Fuddruckers. He turns around like once, and he says, hey, man, just so you know, I don't really eat here very often. And I was like,
okay.
All right. Thank you for that information. I'll file that away.
Well, let me adjust my story notes for this.
Right.
What? Like, what are you talking about?
So he, like, turns around to, like, looking at the board again, and he, like, starts talking to his kids, and he turns back to me and he goes, I'm actually just here to get the kids lunch. I'm not even eating anything. I'm just getting the kids lunch.
Well, Grant, I don't think that he was directing that at you. I think he might have been directing that at the leaky faucet that was the person you were having lunch with, who goes on the air and will just say anything that comes to the top of his mind.
I suppose it's possible. I would still ask London Fletcher, why does it matter that you ate a burger at Fuddruckers that one time?
Because this could have been ping pong before ping pong, right?
It also could have been Dwayne Haskins going to a Wizards game. You know, London Fletcher eats Fuddruckers. That's why he didn't make the tackle.
It could have been. So, but he turns around and he goes, I'm just getting these guys their lunch or their dinner or whatever. He's like, I'm not even eating. And I looked at him, and this time I was like, dude, it's fine, okay. Like, I'm literally not concerned about that. And so the third time he turned around, he goes, I eat, like, super healthy. I eat really, really healthy. And I wanted to be like, listen, I'll leave if you need me to, but I don't care about this at all. I just want to eat. I don't eat healthy. I want to eat a huge burger. I'm going to put bacon on it with a bunch of fries and drink a bunch of cola out of that machine over there. This was pre-EMP 180GP. This is like 273.
Yeah. That's
this is
right.
Like big, big, heavy GP.
When we were fun,
When we were fun and everyone wanted to hang out with us and we were cool. We were the cool guys.
We were cool.
So anyway, so he keeps, like, turning around. So eventually he orders. He goes. I never see him again. We never talk about it again. But what's amazing about this is, like, he was that concerned about that. But every Friday, guys get, like, Chick-fil-A and Popeyes and – like McDonald's and, like, all kinds of stuff brought to the facility. So, like, you would walk past all the players who just got their bags dropped off of Popeyes, eating their biscuits and their potatoes and their chicken. Was like a popular one on Fridays, or Chick-fil-A or something, or whatever burgers or something they did that day. Most of the time, so there was, like, a Chick-fil-A and a Popeyes nearby. It would be, like, those were the go-tos. But, like, guys were just in front of everyone in the locker room, like, scarfing that down or outside in the hallway, not caring at all. But I just remember London Fletcher, who was there to buy his kids a burger one time,
was so
bothered that I might think he ate that food regularly.
That's
and I'm
perfect.
Like, you know what I would think? Good for you, because it's delicious and it's one of the great establishments that we have.
Yeah, so the Hall of Fame caliber linebacker maybe isn't now because he ate Fuds that time.
Yeah, that's
his thinking. That's so weird, man.
I was gonna vote for London, but he had Fuddruckers that time.
But he had the onion rings.
We didn't get back into Ron Rivera audio. We can do that. We've got some time to play with people. We're Grant and Danny. The double play is next on the Fan. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan, the Beltway Blitz today at noon, and at 12:18 of the rule changes in Major League Baseball, which would you be most excited about? Also want to get into what FP Santangelo said to us yesterday. He'd rather baseball not come back at all than come back in a way that doesn't quite resemble what we're used to. I wonder how many people agree with that. Because, Danny, I got to tell you, I am team something is better than nothing. He said kind of tread lightly, be careful with that, and I understand his logic. I do think there are a lot of purists who are going to feel that way because they don't want to see the game played in an abbreviated way with a lot of changes, because then we might keep some of those changes and they might not get the toothpaste put back in the tube. But I just need my fix. I'm itching my elbows and I want something. And so I'm moving forward full steam ahead, even if I don't like some of the changes. But not everyone feels that way. So we could take a little poll with our listeners coming up today on that.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, that's the debate, right? Would you like it in some sort of modified form or nothing? You can take your nothing and shove it, as far as I'm concerned. I have no interest in nothing. As long as my threshold is it safe, then that's fine. We can do a rock and jock trampoline slam ball version of baseball. Just give me something on television where a Washington, D.C. team is competing, please and thank you.
By the way, yesterday I tweeted out the all-decade Redskins team that we put together on the air. Ours were very similar. You had a couple different than mine. I tweeted mine out at Grant H. Paulson if you want to see it. A lot of people were interacting and tweeting about it, liked some things, didn't like some things. A lot of people were scoffing and laughing at the secondary, which was anchored by Bashaud Breeland at corner and Reed Dowdy at safety. But I actually heard from a few guys. So immediately after posting it, Chris Baker tweeted me.
So
like,
funny.
Immediately, the second I posted it. And he kind of was, like, did a couple of gifs where he was very upset that I put Matt Ioannidis over him. So I had to kind of walk back from the ledge on that one. And then I heard from a couple guys who were more happy, like Will Montgomery was tweeting about it and was pumped up.
That's funny.
But I ended up, Reed Dowdy, who was on that list last night, like, reached out and was joking. He was saying, there's no way anybody in the DMV, like, thinks that that's okay or agreed with that. They have to, you know, be trashing me or, you know, joking because people always killed him. Even though, if you look at the numbers, it's not even close. He was statistically the most successful safety of the decade as far as the stats go. But in exchanging texts with him, just real quick, he and his wife, they have three kids. They've adopted a daughter from China as well, who's, I think, 4 years old now, who's got some different issues she's working through. But what an amazing life that guy has. He's an athletic director and a football coach in Colorado. And just his personal family life and some of the things his kids are overcoming. Just texting with him for like 10 minutes last night. What a better human being than I am, Reed Dowdy is.
And also having a good sense of humor about it too, right? Where he was never anybody's first choice. Now, maybe a couple coaches he was, but for every player, for every fan, he sort of became the punching bag. And the thing that I always said is it's not Reed Dowdy's fault that he's Reed Dowdy. It's the fault of the people that make decisions that's what we ended up with every year. Reed Dowdy's here to be on special teams and be a rotational backup part of a successful football operation. You need 10 to 15 Reed Dowdy's per roster in order to start winning some football games. It ain't his fault that he ended up being the answer so often at a position that they just have not been able to adequately fill since the untimely passing of Sean Taylor. They are 0 for the rest of time since then. It's been everybody from Brandon Merriweather to DJ Swearinger to names that just sort of ring out, whether it's Horton or otherwise.
The all-decade safeties, after carefully combing through everyone who played the position from 10 to 19, were Dowdy and Swearinger, who got cut after like 11 times of crushing his coaches in the middle of a season. Those were the best safeties of the decade. It is time for our double play. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports.
Keep it very short and sweet, my friend. I referenced this earlier on in the program, but I am doing nightly YouTube videos, just trying to kill the time, trying to find something, just fun to do here each and every evening. The production value of these things, Grant, is through the roof. It is my left hand holding my cell phone, looking at my fat face, at doing an impression for less than 30 seconds. I do that every night. I just talk about like whatever hashtag is trending. So it's kind of a never-ending bit of fodder. Crack one joke and then get out. Posting those on YouTube. You can check those out. YouTube.com/DannyRouillet97. If you're so inclined, give your boy a subscription and watch and
is
like.
Is Lorenzo Alexander going to be upset that you're trying to take his number? Did you have to pay him to use it?
What's but annoying about that is that they were like, if you want a custom channel, you need to put a number in it. I'm like, they're not a lot of Danny Rouillets running around. There's like eight Rouillets in the world. We're all kind of sweaty dudes with weird hair. Why do I have to put a number? But they said, no, that's what you got to do. So I do that. Also available, done some fun cameos here of late. Go to cameo.com/DRouillet for those. Those are always fun. Get some weird impressions and some weird asks. But yeah, that's kind of what I've been up to in my spare time instead of the grandiose projects that I wanted to complete. I'm just sort of doing those things that like a hamster spinning his wheels.
Was 97 the year you graduated high school? Or like what is this? What is interesting
that was
about
it, yeah.
That number?
That's kind of why I picked it. I wanted to do like one or two. But they said, no, it's got to be two digits. So that's what I went with.
All right. There he is on YouTube. Go find him. Danny Rouillet and his nightly impression. What was last night's, by the way?
Sheldon Cooper from Big Bang Theory.
Oh, you have a good Sheldon Cooper.
I think it's one of my best. Thank you very much.
Do you write in any way a script or do you just go off the cuff?
Off the cuff.
Blitz is next. It too will be off the cuff right here on Grant and Danny.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.